Hello, everyone. I'm Dennis Snow, and this is Speaking of Service Excellence. My guest today is customer service and experience expert Shep Hyken. Shep is one of the leaders in the field of customer service and the customer experience. He's an award-winning keynote speaker and is also a New York Times and Wall Street Journal best-selling author. And I can tell you, he deserves all of the accolades he's received. When Shep Hyken says something, I listen to it, and when he writes something, I read it. In fact, he has a new book coming out titled The Convenience Revolution. I've read a preview copy, and it is fantastic. And I'll be asking Shep to share some of the concepts from the book during today's interview. So Shep, thanks so much for taking time out of your schedule to talk with me.
Dennis, thank you very much for having me. That's a wonderful introduction. And you know, when I do my show, I pretty much say the same thing about you.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that we're in the joint fan club here. So
yeah, the mutual love and admiration.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I've known Shep for many, many years, and so he's not only an interview subject; he's a good friend. So I want to quickly get to the concepts of the new book, but I first want to ask you just to provide some background. You've been more than 30 years in the customer service industry. So how did customer service become your passion and pretty much your life's work?
Sure. And we can go all the way back way beyond 30 years to the age of 12 when I started my first business, birthday party magic show business, where I would go out and entertain little kids. And at that first birthday party, my mom picked me up. I remember it was a Wednesday afternoon. It was after school. Went home that night. My mom, my dad, my brother and sister sitting around the dinner table. I'm talking about the show. My mom says, "What are you going to do after dinner?" And I thought the correct answer was, "I'm going to do homework because it's a school night."
Right.
And she said, "No, you're going to write a thank you note." Really? You need to thank these people that just paid you $16. It was actually $15 plus a dollar tip to entertain those screaming little kids.
Right.
And my dad said, "That is a great idea, but let's take it to the next level. Next week, after they receive the thank you note, call them up, thank them again, and then ask them how they like the show. And they'll tell you what they liked about the show. And if they don't mention certain tricks, those may be the tricks you need to replace with better tricks." So what was happening is my mom and dad were teaching me, number one, how to show appreciation to customers, number two, how to get feedback from customers, and number three, how to improve the whole process or how to improve the quality of the product. You know, it's like, little did I know that this was a customer service lesson at the age of 12.
Yeah, that's fantastic, yeah.
So I kind of started doing that, and it just became part of me to do those types of things. And when I finally did get out of college and wasn't sure what I was going to do, I saw a couple of motivational speakers, and I thought, well, with that entertainment background, by the way, I had graduated from birthday parties to working in nightclubs and hotels while I was in high school and college. And I said, I can get up in front of people. I'm going to write a speech. I found out that customer service, when I found some books, was exactly, this is what I want to talk on. Really, that was 35 years ago, and that's how it all started.
That's fantastic. And I'll tell you, you know, as a speaker, once you can get up in front of a group of kids and entertain them and a group of drunks and entertain them, the audiences you speak to now should be very easy for you.
They're very easy compared to the drunks and the children.
That's right. Well, listen, I want to get right into the concepts of the book, because again, I do think it's fantastic. And
thank you.
I know I've got all of your books, but how many books have you written now?
Well, I've solo authored 7 books and co-authored 5 others. So we don't count the co-authored ones as much, but the first one was Moments of Magic, and that was the one that I still talk about today. And almost every speech that I give, I talk about managing that interaction, managing that moment, avoiding the moment of misery, creating that moment of magic. Yeah, so that's still part of what I do. And in between, you know, a number of books, and now we're at the new one, The Convenience Revolution.
Right. And let me go back real quick, because I love that concept of the difference between moments of misery and moments of magic. I know that's kind of a main focus for you, and I just love that phrasing. So,
and there's also another moment, the moment of mediocrity. And that's the one that's like average or okay. Yeah, they're okay. They're fine. They're satisfactory. And, you know, that's not going to get you anywhere. It's the companies that are always just a little bit better than average, consistently and predictably, they are the ones that amaze customers.
Right.
I just read a great line in an old article. Happened, somebody said, hey, have you ever seen this article? And I had, it's years old. And the person said, surprise and delight, not necessary, just delight.
Okay.
So, yeah. And I thought, well, my version of delight is just being a little bit better than average, but all the time.
Right, right. So. And that consistency, you're right, is the key. Is if you just do it once in a while, you know, that doesn't really count. It's got to be consistent. So the new book, The Convenience Revolution. So tell us a little bit about how that's different than the other ones and what you led you to, you know, focusing in on The Convenience Revolution.
Sure. And the subtitle of the book is How to Deliver a Customer Service Experience That Disrupts the Competition and Creates Fierce Loyalty. And who doesn't want that, right?
Right.
At least in business. So the difference is, I guess my last book, I was just talking through, as I was getting the final touches on the book, I was talking to the person who helps me edit and proofread and grammar check the book, and very, very sharp dude. And I said, you know, I get the feeling there's something that some of these companies that I write about have in common that we haven't written about before, or maybe we have, just we haven't dug down deep. And what's that? I said, I think they're just really convenient and easy to do business. We keep talking about Amazon. We keep talking about Ace Hardware. And, you know, granted, they're knowledgeable and helpful, but what do they do that's different? Well, they're so much easier to do business with than their competitor. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, I don't know if anybody's ever written a book about convenience. Now, the closest thing I could find was The Effortless Experience. And I talked with Matt Dixon, one of the authors, not that long ago. And really, it's quite different. The Effortless Experience is a lot about the support experience and you know, customer effort score, how hard it is to get. But it's not the same as being convenient. So convenience is really, it's beyond customer service. It's truly a marketing strategy. It's truly something that you can create a unique value proposition around that separates you from your competitor, and in some cases completely disrupts an entire industry.
That's
so
great.
It's pretty much that simple. It's like, how easy are you to do business with? And whoever is easier, you or your competition, all things being equal, the one that's more convenient is going to win.
And what's incredible is how many companies are so difficult to do business with. And they know it. They know it. They have to know it. And it drives me crazy. And so you're right. You know, when I think about some of the companies that I am very loyal to, you know, there's various reasons, but one of them is certainly they're easy to do business with. You know, they don't throw hassles at you every step of the way.
And when there is a hassle, the people try to figure out, well, what can I do to get rid of this hassle for the, you know, customer?
Immediately.
You know, they don't mean it to happen, and they want to try to figure out how to eliminate, if not mitigate it.
Right. So during the book, you talk about, you know, it's really based on the six, what you call the six convenience strategies, you know, six ways that people can approach this subject in an organized way. So can you walk us through those six convenience strategies?
Sure. And the way the book
maybe
is,
maybe also just give a quick example of each if you could.
Yeah, happy to do that. So the way the book is laid out is we start off by setting up the concept, and then I give one major case study, and it encompasses all six areas of convenience. It's a great way to introduce it. So Dennis, I'm going to ask you, I know you read the book, but had you not read the book prior to that, if I said to you, what's the most convenient company to do business with? Would you have said?
Immediately, I would say Amazon.
Right. And 9 out of 10 people, if not 99 out of 100 people, will usually say Amazon. They figured it out. I mean, they came in early in the game as a retail bookseller that went online, and they created an online engine, if you will, their whole shopping cart system and the way they showcase the books. Open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's, after all, it's a website. The pricing was a little less expensive than going to your typical brick and mortar shop. Obviously, they could afford to do that. They didn't have retail stores all over the world. But what happened is they out-convenienced their customer, and then they started to expand into other areas. And I mean, not their customer, they out-convenienced their competition.
Right.
It was just easier. And as they got into other areas and they started focusing on easier and better ways to do business, they came up with all kinds of ideas. Technology, for example, you can get what looks like a doorbell and put it on the side of your washing machine. And when you run out of washing machine detergent, you just push a button and it shows up in the next day or so. I mean, how convenient is that? Yeah. You know, their dash button, one click buying, where it's just once you have your information about your credit card and everything in the system and you want something, you just one click, boom, it's done. Right. The other day I bought a couple of duffel bags for a trip that we're getting ready to take. And I found the ones I wanted and I called my wife over. I go, hey, are these good? And she goes, yeah. One click, not even 6 seconds later, order done, email sent. We've got your order. It's confirmed. We'll let you know when it ships.
The drones are on the way. The drone is on the way with it.
The drone is on the way. And less than 48 hours, the bags show up, the duffel bags show up. So anyway, I go on and on about that. But that sets up the premise. And then we get into the six areas of convenience. And each one of these six areas, I give five case studies, one major case study and several others. Mm-hmm. So I'll go through them one at a time if you want real quickly.
Yeah, that would be great. Quick aside on Amazon. I was doing a presentation recently and a lady from Amazon came up afterwards and we chatted for a minute. And you know, she'd been with Amazon for a few years. And she brought up a term that I'd never heard before. You know when you used to order something from a catalog, it was a big deal. You know, it was a bit of a hassle. You had to send in the check and then you waited for the product to come and you looked forward to it coming, you know, and ordering something was a big deal. She said, now with Amazon, we have what's called Amazomnesia, where you forgot you ordered something and it shows up at your door and you're all like, oh yeah, I forgot I ordered that. You know, we've reached the point of Amazomnesia where we forget we've ordered something and it shows up.
Because it's so normal.
Right.
And you know, remember, mail order used to be, you'll get it in 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
and,
a lifetime.
And it would come in 4 and you go, wow, these guys are good.
Yeah, they know what they're doing. So anyway, that's just an aside. So the six convenience strategies then, because I think they are fantastic. And I think that our listeners can really apply these six strategies.
Well, the first big reason is, and big, you know, strategy, if you will, is to simply reduce friction. Mm-hmm. Now, all six of the strategies have some element of reducing friction, otherwise it wouldn't be convenient. But in some cases, some companies have really used that as their total focus. And the case study that I give for this at the top is Uber. Mm-hmm. If you think about what Uber did, they disrupted the entire taxi cab industry because mm-hmm. they created an easier solution. So much easier. So I live in St. Louis, Missouri. There's not taxi cabs driving around my place, you know, like in New York City. So I've got to call for a cab. And then they tell me it'll be there in 10 minutes. And 15 minutes later, I call and say, where's my cab? Well, he's on his way. He said he'd be there in 2 minutes. And 5 minutes later, I'm wondering if I'm ever going to see my taxi mm-hmm. cab. Finally shows up, get to where I'm supposed to be. You know, now I know what it costs because the trip is over and he flips the meter back, you know, off. And I reach in my pocket and I pay. Uber eliminated all of that. You open up the app, you can see how far away the driver is. You put in the destination. You now know how much it costs. And once you agree that everything's cool and it's the driver's fairly close and you agree with the price, you push the little button and guess what? That driver shows up. You can even watch the driver showing up on your screen as it drives through your streets, the little map on your screen of your phone. And then when you get out of the cab, or actually not the cab, but the car, by the way, the driver knows who you are and usually uses your name when you get in. You don't have to tell the driver where you're going because it's already in the system. You already know what the price is and you don't pay when you leave. You pay, but you don't pay like by reaching in your pocket and pulling out the money. No, that is how convenient they made it. And it's just amazing how they completely really disrupted the entire industry. And now, obviously, there's competitors like Lyft and some of the taxi cabs are starting to realize, you know what, we could do some of what Uber does and get some of this business back. And they're starting to figure out they have to do it. But there is an example of a company that's used reducing friction as their huge value proposition.
Well, and they've created almost a generic term now. There are people say, "Yeah, I'm just going to order an Uber. You know, I'm going to Uber.
Right.
I'm going to Uber to the store, or I'm going to Uber over to your office." And that's when you know you've really got something going. Is when people just use it as a verb. Use your company as a verb.
Like FedEx this for me when it's really right. UPS it or post office it for me. Which is pretty funny. The other example, there's a number of other examples, but another one that's crystal clear is a company called Clear. You're in Orlando. You know about Clear.
I know them. Yep.
You know, Clear is basically, if you go to the airport, you have your security line, TSA, which is, I don't know, what does TSA stand for? The something security.
Transportation
security. Right.
People and have other things that they say it stands for.
Right. I know. I was just wanted to see which one you were going to come up with. and then if you pay a little money, you get TSA pre, which means you can avoid the general line because you've been pre-screened and go into a shorter line, which, by the way, is not always so short.
Right.
But then Clear comes along, spelled C-L-E-A-R, all capital letters, and you pay a little bit more money. And why do you buy Clear? Because they get you to the front of that line faster, quicker. You put your two little fingers on top of the screen. It recognizes your fingerprints. You show the person your boarding pass, and they lead you to the front of the TSA line, which is amazing. It's like, you know, when you're in a hurry and you're traveling all the time, an extra 5 or 10 minutes of not having to stand in line multiplied by, you know, 40 or 50 trips a year, that's a lot of time.
Yeah. And you're right. So often now the Clear line is shorter than the TSA pre-line.
Oh, yeah. I've never been in a Clear line that was more than 3 minutes long. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty amazing.
So eliminated that friction then. They've taken some of that hassle factor out of the experience.
Right. And you know what they gave you? As a result of what you paid for, they gave you time.
Yeah.
And time is precious. Yeah. And you'll see some of the case studies, it's all about saving a customer time, making it easier. All right. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about self-service. Mm-hmm. Self-service, most people think, well, is that really self-service, isn't that less customer service? Well, if you look at it as self-service, do it yourself, just to save a little bit of money, maybe that's not the best customer service, but that's kind of what a gas station did. Self-service, save a few dollars, or save a few pennies, adds up to dollars by pumping your own gas. But that's not the kind of self-service we're talking about, unless the customer feels it's faster and more convenient. You go to a grocery store, you can go into the self-service area, not have to wait in line and do it yourself. Mm-hmm, but what about my example of Panera Bread Company or Panera Bakery? You have those in Orlando. We have them here in St. Louis. They actually started here in St. Louis, and they're all over. I don't remember how many restaurants they have around the world, but there's a lot of them. So I go every Friday morning to Panera in St. Louis, and I noticed something happening. One day I walked in, and they had kiosks, so you can order on a screen rather than wait in line. By the way, typically you'd go in, you'd wait in line, you'd order. They'd call your name, you'd get your food, then you either leave or sit down if you're taking it to go or sitting down. Well, all of a sudden they have this kiosk, and I go, oh, wow, they're going to eliminate the line. No, they're not. They're just giving the customer a choice. And then they came up with a better system than calling your name out. They gave you a pager. And then when your pager buzzed, you gave the pager to the person that gave you your food. And they came out with a better system. They gave you a pager and said, sit down. Put the pager on the table. We have a sensor in the table. We'll bring the food to you. So I asked the manager one day, this took about a year plus, year and a half almost, for I saw this transition happen. And I said, what is the reason you're doing this for? And his words were simple. He said, for the convenience of our guests. That was it. And what's interesting, I said, so did you cut some people out of the payroll as a result of the self-serve? And they go, oh, no. Actually, it's the opposite. We have to staff up properly. Because now we bring the food to the person and we actually can engage with them at a better level. And so when you do that, it's just a better experience altogether. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So the guest is at the center of that decision. I love it.
Yeah. And that was really cool, is that they really did put the guest at the center and said, what can we do to make it easier? And by the way, if you want to wait in line, and I've seen the lines get long and people still wait in line. And I have my friends come over here to the kiosk. No, I just want to, go up there and talk to the lady. I don't know.
So. But, you know, anyway. You talk about a competitive environment that they operate in. I mean, people have a lot of choices and, big name choices. And so doing those things just to make it a little bit more convenient, through that, having that option is a great strategy.
And, you know, what I love about it is they didn't do it to eliminate people. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of places you go to that offer the self-service type check-in, it was so they can cut down on people. It saves them money in the long run because they don't have personnel. No, this is not the case here. Number three is technology. And where can you use technology to enhance the experience? And I use PayPal as a primary example of a company that figured out how to create a better experience and an easier experience of transferring money from one person to the next using technology. And if you've ever used PayPal, and you know, Dennis, it's real easy. If you're in the PayPal system and I've got your email, I can transfer money to you in literally
all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. 30 seconds. You know, it's so easy.
And
so
they can, and if I, you know, there's been times when it turns out I overpaid for something, the company can refund that money back to me through my PayPal account instantaneously. It's
instantaneously.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Yep. So, and it's a great way for business. It's a great thing for kids. If you, you know, like I send my kids money through PayPal or Venmo, which now PayPal owns Venmo. Anyway, technology is great. Another quick example of technology is like using an app. We love the No Wait app, and not every city has it yet, but the No Wait app is exactly what it sounds like. No wait. When you want to go to a restaurant, you look on the app to see if the restaurant is part of the No Wait system. And you can actually put your name on the waiting list through the No Wait app. Mm-hmm. So it's digital, it's electronic, and it'll tell you, oh, it's an hour and 10 minute wait. And then you can watch your name move up the list and you can time your arrival. So when you land at the restaurant, you show up, there's no wait. So it's
I'm going to download that one today.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if it's in Orlando or not, but it you know, it's in a number of cities.
Okay.
So that's technology. Yeah. Number four is subscription. And that's just like it sounds. I mean, you have a magazine subscription or a newspaper subscription. Where can you tie a subscription model into your business? Amazon now has a program called Subscribe and Save. Any consumable that you use on a regular basis can be sold through a subscription process. For example, dog food, Chewy's.com. They sell or Chewy.com. They sell the dog food. It shows up at your doorstep when it's supposed to. Dollar Shave Club. Every month you get your new blades. Yeah. The hardware store that every 6 months you have to change out your air conditioning and furnace filters. They just automatically send you the filter. They have your credit card and information and your address on file, and you don't have to do anything. And it shows up. Oh, and that's my reminder. I need to change my filters. So subscription is a great model. Maintenance contracts with companies, you know, who would do something ongoing. It's a great model to create recurring revenue and to make it easier for your customer. My auto dealership actually sold me my first 4 years worth of service on my car. All the oil changes, all the major maintenance, gave me a little bit of a price break, but this allowed me to not like, oh, it's a hassle, it's expensive to go get it done. No, they'd send me an email, tell me it's time to bring it in. And actually, I didn't even bring it in because that's the one I'm going to get into next, which is delivery. Mm-hmm. And my dealer said, and this is really cool. You don't have to be a huge company like Amazon. And we've talked about pretty big companies. So I have this small auto dealership that I have bought my car from. I was dealing with a very large dealership that was very, very close to my office. I could drop the car off. About half the time, they'd give me a loaner if they had it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I just walked to work. Very easy and convenient. And one day, I was driving by this other dealership that's about maybe 12 miles from my home. And my wife says, look at that car. Man, let's go check out that car in the window just to look at it. And we walked in. It's a beautiful car. I drove the car. I told the guy I wasn't going to buy the car from him because I really even hadn't thought about it. But I love that car. And I said, you know, the only problem is you're so far from where we live, we probably wouldn't buy it from here. And he said, do you see a waiting room anywhere around? And I go, no. He goes, that's because we have one, but it's very small and it's in back there. But if you buy the car from us, you'll never have to come here and wait for your car to be serviced. We will bring you a new car every time, drop it off, pick your car up, bring your car back when it's ready. The only time you come back in here is to buy your next car. And I thought, wow, and what's this going to cost? He says, no, nothing extra. Here's the deal we're going to make you. Go shopping around with other dealers, and if you find a better deal, let us know. We'll match it. And guess what? They disrupted a company that I'd been doing business with for over 20 years because they became more convenient. By the way, I went back to the auto dealer that I've been dealing with, and I asked them if they would match the offer and the service, and they said no. So,
that's incredible, you know. And again, there's no doubt in my mind where you're going to buy your next car, you know, after an experience.
And we've bought several since then.
Yeah.
So my wife bought hers. I'm getting ready to buy another one as my car's finally getting old enough to do that. So they're happy. That's exactly what they wanted to have happen. I mean, delivery could be any type of delivery, delivery of food. Look at what Domino's does. You know, they deliver. Right. I love my Insomnia Cookies is in the book. And if you don't have an Insomnia Cookies in your area, that's
not
a shame.
Yeah. I'll Google it just to see if we do. Well, I don't think so.
1 o'clock in the morning, I need a cookie fix. I go on and they've got an app and I order my cookies. And like Uber, where you could see the little driver getting closer to you, you can see when your cookies are coming out of the oven. And here's the cool thing, very inexpensive, very reasonable, and you get like within 30, 45 minutes, you get a box of warm, freshly baked cookies or brownies or whatever it is that you order. I love this company.
Yeah.
So that's delivery.
Yeah, finally, reminds me, the delivery thing reminds me when a few years back, a small bank in the area, a boutique bank, approached Debbie and me, my wife Debbie and me, about moving to their bank. And Debbie said, no, we can't because you don't have a drive-through teller. And our dog knows when we're going to the bank. And when we go to the bank, you know, they put a dog biscuit in the container when they would send it out. And Cambria always looked forward to going to the bank. Somehow she knew whenever we were going to the bank. I don't know how that works. But so this little boutique bank that doesn't have a drive-through said, listen, here's what we will do. When you come to us, we will send a teller out to your car. You have the paperwork ready. We'll send a teller out to your car with a dog biscuit for Cambria and do the banking right there at the car. I said,
you'll do that?
And they said, absolutely. That's how much we want your business. They made us feel like we were going to be the biggest depositors, and I know we're not, but just the fact that they were willing to do that was amazing.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah. And that's what I'm talking about. And see, you don't have to be a big business, and sometimes it's a very small thing. And by the way, speaking of banks, that leads us to number six, which is Access. And Access, the main case study there is Huntington Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And I chose them Not because they're, I don't know much about what, they're not even in St. Louis, and I've never banked with them before. But why do people love to bank with them? Because they have extended hours. Okay, so it's not banker's hours, like 9 to 5, when right. most people are working and they want to go to the bank, then they have to, like on their hour of lunch, they got to get over there and hope there's not a long line. No, they stay open beyond 5. They are open on the weekends. They've extended their hours. It's like the repair center for cars. We're speaking of automotive dealerships. Most dealerships close the repair centers at 5:30, and they don't have weekend hours. But then there's companies like Firestone that are open 7 days a week, and they have hours till 9 or 10 o'clock at night. And you wonder why they're doing so well, and the other ones are going, wow, what can we do to get more business? Well, just be more convenient. Mm-hmm. But Huntington Bank, extended hours. Walmart is another great. You can't, by the way, I could have used Walmart instead of Amazon because they excel in the six areas as well. But Walmart, they disrupted in a different way back when they started moving into neighborhoods and, you know, creating this super center. And by the way, the super center is a concept of convenience in itself. But Walmart, did you know that 90% of Americans live within 10 minutes of a Walmart?
I did not know that. That's incredible.
I know. That's pretty convenient.
That's pretty, yeah. That's the highlights Access. You're right.
Yeah. Right. And so whether it's hours of operation, whether it's location, I mean, Starbucks in a major city, you can look across the street and there's another Starbucks, but I'm in one right now. You know, it's location and it's, you know, how easy if you've got customer support, you know, are your hours customer focused or there are your hours company focused, you know, different ways of looking at
that. That's a great phrase. I love that. Yeah, are your hours customer focused or are they company focused? And I think probably most people would agree in most cases they are company focused. So yeah.
A lot of decisions, unfortunately, are made with the company in mind, not the customer in mind.
Yeah. Yep. So those are the six convenient strategies. Fantastic. And I've got more questions, but this is a good point in the interview just to stop for a moment. And you've got a special offer on the book going right now that I took advantage of, and I would like the listeners to be able to take advantage of. So can you give us just a snapshot of what that offer on the book is right now?
Sure. So here's the thing. The book is coming out in October. And if you buy the book before October 2nd, when it comes out, you immediately receive the ebook that you could start reading today. So even if it's, you know, we're probably about 6-7 weeks out before the book comes out, or even if we're a month out or 5 days, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. If you buy the book, what happens is you pay us for the book. You go to beconvenient.com, www.beconvenient.com. And you just buy it from our website. What'll happen is when the book does come out, it'll get shipped from Amazon or Barnes & Noble or wherever, but immediately you'll receive an email back and be able to download the ebook at no charge, free immediately. You could start reading it and start being convenient right away.
So www.beconvenient.com. And that's exactly what I did. And yeah, I got it immediately and was able to dive right into it. Now I always look forward to getting the hard copy, but this was a way to get into the book immediately. So yeah, I would encourage people to do that. Now, one of the things that you said in the book, and I've heard you say this before too, and I think this is just such an important concept. You said that customers are no longer comparing their experience solely with competitors in their own industry, but rather customers now compare their experience across industries.
Yes, so to the best service they've ever received.
Yeah, and that's a big group now. So what should people pay attention to them? What should companies be paying it? You know, because that can be kind of overwhelming. So what do they pay it? What should we be paying attention to?
So it is overwhelming. And here's what's happened is you're not compared to your direct competitor. It could be somebody that sold you a pair of shoes at a nice department store. And maybe they found the $25 shoes that were half price and they were knowledgeable and got you the best deal. And now I'm dealing with a customer service rep, or I'm dealing with a salesperson, or I'm dealing with anybody. And I'm thinking, why can't they be as good as that person who sold me the shoes?
Yeah.
And so the bar is higher because companies have figured it out, and the best companies and the best people set the bar higher. Now, there is good news. Most companies are recognizing this, and they're starting to say, what can I do? Bad news is most companies, I shouldn't say most companies, many companies are not moving fast enough. Mm-hmm. They're not keeping up quick enough, and therefore they're laggards. But I mean, I realize they're still trying, they're still working at it. And so understand that the customer is setting this expectation, and the expectation is based on prior experiences with anybody, not just that company. Mm-hmm. And are you going to meet and exceed? And today, what's really cool is if you meet the customer's expectations on a consistent level, you are delighting them, you are amazing them. Because again, at the very beginning of our interview, you even emphasized that word consistency. Mm-hmm. On a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being bad, 5 being excellent, you've got bad, you've got fair, you've got satisfactory, you've got good, you've got excellent. Satisfactory is that moment of mediocrity I talked about earlier.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So the best companies out there that get a 5 aren't hitting 5s every single time. What they're not doing is hitting 3s and 2s and 1s.
Yeah.
So that's what they're not doing. And by not being mediocre or worse, they're excellent. Because any company, why does somebody get a good? It's because sometimes they're dropping to being average or satisfactory. Mm-hmm. And so the best companies have figured out that we don't have to go above and beyond and blow people away day after day. No. We just have to be a tiny, tiny bit better than average. We do it all the time. And when there's a problem and when there's some opportunity, sure, we'll jump up and seize that opportunity. But otherwise, just Focus on that little bit better than average all the time, and you'll nail it.
Well, I know one of your favorite restaurants when you come to Orlando, and it's one of my favorite restaurants, is Seasons 52.
Can't wait to come back.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites, and that one actually did start here in Orlando too. But they and my wife and I, we're regular customers. We go all the time, and it's not that they top themselves every time. It's that I can always, I can be guaranteed that we are going to have a very good experience every time. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's an amazing experience, but it's always at least very good. And so I think that really validates what you're talking about. And I have no idea how much money we've spent there over the years, but it's a lot. And that's the reason why. We know at a minimum, it's going to be very, very good.
Yep. And you know that. And by the way, your definition of very, very good is maybe somebody else has a different definition of it. Mm-hmm. But for you, and that's why I always, you know, preach to my clients, you can't be everything to everybody. You're going to make many people happy. And some people, no matter how good you are, you're not going to make them happy because they shouldn't be your customer to start with.
Right.
So
right.
You fit into the perfect profile. You appreciate good service. You like good food. Hey, they're not the 5-star white glove customer service restaurant that's fancy and formal. No, but they meet, if not exceed your needs every single time you go in there.
Yeah. And I know that. I always know mm-hmm. that they will do that. So, you know, when you read these convenience strategies that you've been talking about, and we you know talk about some of the companies that you've highlighted, you know, companies have access to this information. So why, in general, is customer service so bad? I mean, a lot of it, and I don't want to say it's common sense because it, you know, there are new things coming out all the time, but there are certain things like, you should be convenient, that you think we should know that. So why are so companies so bad at it?
Well, I don't think they start out thinking, let's be bad at it. I think mm-hmm. what happens is process gets in the way of them being good at it. And they haven't thought it through well enough. Mm-hmm. And Dennis, you and I are in the same business. And it sometimes when somebody says, why are most companies, and I don't think it's most companies, I think it's many companies, and the squeaky wheel gets the oil. Well, the squeaky wheel gets noticed. And when it's not good, it stands out. When it's supposed to happen the way it's supposed to happen, it's virtually invisible. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about, you know, in an extreme is your insurance company. You know, you keep paying your premiums and you never have a problem. Well, that's right. Because you've never made a claim.
Mm-hmm. Right.
and then, you know, 10 years later, you finally make your first claim, and guess what? It's easy. And you expected it to be that because you've been paying your money and they've been doing their job. They've been insuring whatever it is that they insure. And it's like an invisible level of service. Well, it's the same thing on a different scale, but it's like, you know, hey, people are supposed to be friendly. They're supposed to be nice. It is common sense. It's not always so common. And, you know, it does frustrate me sometimes when a company doesn't put the right person in the job that most and best represents them.
Oh, I think you're right about that. Yeah. Yeah.
And you and I travel for a living, so we see it all of the time in airplanes, hotels, restaurants. We go, man, how could they have hired this person? Or why didn't they train them better to do this? So, you know, we're moving away from the strategic and concept side of it to something a little bit more tactical, which is training, which, by the mm-hmm. way, you and I both believe extremely important over and over again. Yeah. You don't train once, you constantly reinforce. That might be another subject for another day.
But you're right, as I think part of it is a gap in training. And I think sometimes we look at training people as a formal training class or something like that, when really so many things play into training. You know, your Monday morning huddles, the one-on-one conversations that you have in the hallway as you interact with an employee in your company. You know, all of that is training. When I was with Disney, you know, one of the questions that I used to get asked all the time is, people would say, how long is the training at Disney? And the answer was, it was from the moment you said, I think I'd like to work here, to the moment you leave the company, everything in between is training, because they're relentless about surrounding you with messages about the role you play in delivering a great customer experience or guest experience at Disney.
And I love that. And that's what I love about Disney, one of my favorite companies in the world. And you got to work there.
I know, for 20 years. Yeah, 20. And that wasn't, but you made a good point earlier. It wasn't, no company is perfect, and they are not perfect, but they work really, really hard at creating that culture that drives the loyalty. But it goes back to the point that you're making about, it comes down to what we do with our people, and you've got to be focused on that. So let's, as we're coming to the end here, so what can a company do? If you had to say, okay, well, let's agree, step one is buying your new book. Okay, that's step.
I love that idea.
That a company should do. So what's the next step then? If you were to prescribe kind of a, all right, here's the way to approach this convenience revolution. First, you buy the book, and then what?
Well, I mean, obviously read the book. There's study questions at the end of each of the six sections to make you start thinking about, wow, can I do this? And by the way, don't try to take on all six. There are many companies that may only be able to take on one of these. I believe at least one or two, even three, could work for virtually any type of business. Some companies can do all six. But the best place to start to implement the concept of convenience, and I know this is going to sound cliche, is do a journey map. And normally when I do journey maps, I look at what's happening at the top line, the interactions that the customers have with the company and the people, as well as what's happening behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. But for the purpose of convenience, by the way, internal convenience is every bit as important as external, like internal and external customers. Mm-hmm. But let's just focus on the external customer right now. And that is, where in the process do you give any form of friction that can be done better? Like, a friend of mine took his father to the hospital for a knee surgery, and he was blown away. And he gave me a list of, he says, I read your book, and let me tell you what this company does. And they probably aren't even thinking about it. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you they're thinking about it. You drive up, it says free valet parking, no tipping. Okay, well, now that makes it a no-brainer. Right. All right. Number two, when the father got out of the car for his surgery, there were more than one valet, personnel there. The one valet says, let me take you inside, and actually led the person inside. When they sat down to check in, there was no paperwork to be done. All of that had been done ahead of time. The only thing that this person should be thinking about is their surgery and not about the paperwork and the minutiae that goes all around it, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and then they went on and on. He went on with four or five other areas of convenience. So what happened, if you want to break this down, is that this surgery center took a look at all the points of friction. They also looked at the competitors and said, what aren't they doing that they could be doing? And they tried to look at it from the lens of the patient and not of the surgery center. And that's what happened. So take a look at the different points of contact that you have with your customer. What happens even in between? So is there anything here that creates any kind of friction whatsoever? And if so, what can I do to eliminate? What technologies that are out there that might make it easier? What if I delivered instead of make them come to me? What if I called them instead of made them call me? Simple as that. You're creating a little bit more convenience in the structure of what you do.
And you can have that discussion, in team huddles. What are the points of friction? Because a lot of times, the frontline employees, they're the ones that have to deal with those points of friction all the time. And so just getting our people involved in what are those points of friction and what can we do about them? I think that's a fabulous idea.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, and I'm a big believer in the terms that we use and the language that we use. And I love that phrase, points of friction, because that sticks in my mind. What are those points of friction that we should be dealing with?
And it amazes me, and tied to the points of friction is when you sit down and you're talking to your people and you say, so what are the most common complaints that you hear from our customers? And then somebody says, you know what, we always get that one. Like, that happens every week. And I'm thinking to myself, why? Why is it still happening every week? Why is it? What can, now I realize some things there's nothing you can do about. There's going to be, you know, or they're out of your control and issues will happen. And you know, we know our big common complaint here is somebody didn't receive their book that they bought or their CD or DVD mm-hmm. that they bought. And the reason is, it's not because anything we had, you know, issue with. It's once we put it into the hands of the post office or UPS or FedEx and it doesn't get there. But when the customer calls us, we don't say, hey, it's not our fault. Yeah. But we realize, so we know that that's going to happen. So we have, it's not a script, but we know exactly what to say and what to do when that happens to make the customer feel good that they called us to let us know.
That's a great idea. That's rather than placing the blame where it really should be placed, but rather than doing that, it's dealing with the customer's issue. I love that. Yeah, fantastic. That's a great idea. You know, in your healthcare experience with your friend and all the things that they eliminated, my elderly mother, my 87-year-old mother just had hip replacement surgery, and we had a very different experience than your friend. And you know, it's one thing to mess with me when it comes to customer service, but imagine messing with your mom when it comes
Not good.
Yeah, it was not good. So I've got all kinds of material for future speeches. So, Shep, this has been fantastic. Yeah, these are great, great tips. Again, I just want to make sure that people know exactly how to get the special offer on your book. So can you go over that just one more time?
Sure. Very easy. Beconvenient.com. Just go to www.beconvenient.com. Go there. Purchase the book there. You'll pay basically the retail price, but we include the shipping and the tax as part of that price, and you immediately get the ebook. Now, if for some reason you want to buy it from Amazon, go for it. Buy it from Amazon and just send me an email that says, hey, look, here's my order. Just forward the order. We'll send you the ebook anyway.
Oh, that's very generous. Very generous. And now when they go to order the ebook too, I just want to make the point, you know, Shep has a lot of resources on the customer experience. So when you go to the site where you can order the ebook, there's other places that to navigate through to see some of the other things that Shep has to offer. And it's really, he offers wonderful resources.
Thank
Shep, I appreciate you offering these insights today. Fantastic. I learned a lot, and I know that the listeners, too, they've learned a lot, too. So, Shep, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. And I always like to tell people to be amazing, but now I'm also telling them be convenient.
All right. Very good. So my thanks to those of you who have tuned in to Speaking of Service Excellence. Be sure to watch for future audio, video, and written content, all focused on creating a world-class customer experience. Thanks so much for listening.